Welcome to the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. For thousands of years, the sages have known that compassion is a powerful force for good. In the last two decades, compassion scholars caught up with these sages, proving that there is an ROI to building loving communities and businesses. This podcast features leaders who can teach us about the power of compassion. I am so delighted to welcome Josh Tetrick, the founder and CEO of Eat Just, to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. I feel like I get to interview a compassionate superhero today. Part of our mission here is to shine a bright light on leaders that are preventing or alleviating suffering. And I feel like you're doing that for people and the planet and for animals. So welcome to the podcast. I'm so honored to have you.
Thanks, Laurel. Where are you doing this from? Where are you located right now?
I'm in Sag Harbor, New York. And where are you today?
I'm in Kauai, Hawaii, which is the oldest island in the Hawaiian island chain. So you might hear some chickens in the background.
That's fantastic.
These are some wild chickens out there. So hopefully they make an appearance.
And do you live there or live in California or both?
I've just been traveling around during COVID time. And this is one of the stops.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm about 15 minutes from the ocean on the east end of Long Island. And I don't have any chickens in the backyard, but I have some deer and some baby deer in the forest behind me. Beautiful. So connect nature with us as well. Josh, I'm really interested. Why don't you just explain to our listeners a little bit about the creation story of your company? And then I want to circle back to your story,
your personal story. Yeah. So about 9.5 years ago, we started this company called Eat Just. And we decided that we wanted to figure out a way to make real good food, healthy, tasty food, without needing to slaughter a single animal, without needing to direct bulldozers to knock down our biodiverse rainforests, without needing to use all these antibiotics that we currently use. How do we figure out a way to make meat and eggs without all that stuff? That was the idea, because if we can do that, we'll eat in a way that we think is healthier, kinder, in our words, more just. That's a big idea for the company. And we started with the most ubiquitous animal protein in the world, the egg. So it seems like an obvious assumption that an egg comes from an animal, because that's been the case for thousands of years. And about 2 trillion animal eggs were laid last year, chicken eggs. U.S. lays about 10%, China about 33%. And it's just the most consumed animal protein. So we decided that we would challenge that assumption that an egg needs to come from an animal and say, what if it could come from a plant? And what if it came from a plant, if it would be healthier, if it would be more cost effective, and eventually it could replace, at least to a significant extent, the egg from an animal. And then we built a brand and a technology and a business model around this idea that we call Just Egg today. And it's become the fastest growing egg brand in the United States. We've sold well over 100 million of them. We're launching in Korea and Europe. We're available with street vendors in China and Pete's Coffee Chain and across the United States, and 20,000 points of retail distribution from Birmingham, Alabama, Walmart to Whole Foods in San Francisco. And then about 4 years ago, we decided to challenge another assumption, which is in order to eat an animal, you need to slaughter an animal. And that, again, feels like such an obvious thing that ends up not being true. And we developed a technology called cultivating meat, which is making meat without all the animals, all the slaughter, all the environmental issues associated with conventional animal production. And it starts off with a single cell. We then identify nutrients to feed that cell. And then we scale it up in a giant steel vessel called a bioreactor. So the end product is the same. Everything that came before it is different and better and safer and kinder. And ultimately, we think that's how the vast majority of meat consumed by all of us will be. So we're running hard on those two things. Our headquarters is in San Francisco. We have folks who are part of the company globally. We're motivated to get this done as fast as we can.
So exciting. So I want to circle back to eggs. I just found out that I kind of suspected it, but I am allergic to eggs, so I eat too many eggs. But how is this egg, your egg, healthier than a conventional egg?
Yeah. So kind of step back and look at the conventional egg world. 2 trillion eggs laid last year. 99% of those eggs are not cage-free or free-range or chickens dancing under the sunlight and quiet. They're the other kind of eggs. The average cost of an egg globally is about 8.2 cents. So our goal is to say, all right, what if in using a plant instead of an animal, you can make it at first healthier? So I'll start there. It has about 67% less saturated fat. It's entirely free of all cholesterol, including the worst kind, LDL cholesterol. A little bit more protein when you blend our products together per gram than a conventional egg has. LDL cholesterol in particular is the one piece of our diet that's the most correlated to heart disease and some other chronic diseases like that. So that's how it's healthier. And then from an environmental perspective, all of those chickens, those chickens that lay those 2 trillion eggs are really hungry, and they end up consuming a lot of soy and corn. And that soy and corn ends up being grown on vast tracts of land that formerly were the home often of rainforests. So we cut down rainforests, we grow lots of soy and corn to feed chickens that are laying eggs. And about a third of the habitable land on this only planet that we have is dedicated to that singular bizarre activity of planting soy and corn or other feed for animals that we end up consuming by ourselves or with our family. So we end up using a whole lot less water, land, and carbon emissions than conventional approaches, about 80% across the board. So that's why it's better from an environmental perspective.
Yeah, it's amazing. And water, especially if you have folks in California, we know is so important, figuring out how to reduce our water usage. Yeah. That's amazing. So there's really no chickens involved in your eggs. They're all plants.
Only as an inspiration. Only as an inspiration, yeah, but no. Chicken
they're your spirit animal, but they're not.
That's about it. And a good one of our sensory goals is before the end of 23, we want the vast majority of people to prefer it, taste, texture, smell, to the best tasting pasture raised egg. So not only an inspiration, but a model in terms of where we want to go in terms of the overall texture, flavor, color. We're on version 3 today. Every year we put out a version that has improvements on these core characteristics. How does it chew in your mouth? How does it smell? What is the flavor profile? How does it scramble in a pan? Is it sticking? Is it sticking in just the right amount, or is it sticking too much? How does it function? Can you bake a pound cake with it? Answer is yes today. Can you bake a cake that normally would require just egg whites with it today? No, you can't. So there's work we need to do to add functionality to it.
Yeah, just so you know, I'm Italian and Irish, so we always say that food and beverages was our spiritual path. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go buy some Just Egg. Is that the right name?
That's right.
I'm gonna be making quiche later today. Yep. So thank you for Just Egg. Yep. That's very exciting. And thank you for iterating, and thank you for helping the planet and people and me. Because it's been hard to give up eggs, but I don't have to anymore.
It goes to Laurel, and this is how we approach the company generally. It's in food, particularly animal agriculture. What are these most commonly held assumptions that when you challenge them, when you press them, when you poke them, when you look at all angles of it, end up being wrong? And again, this first assumption is, well, of course an egg comes from a chicken. That's obvious. You know, it's as obvious as, of course, if you want to get from, you know, San Francisco to Missouri, you get on a horse and buggy. But at the end of the day, we found the consumer wants something that tastes good, that makes them feel good, that they can afford. And if we can facilitate that whole, you know, taste, feel good, afford process by using a plant, you know, we think we'll be better off for it.
Well, I watched the documentary that you and your company were part of. It's called They Say It Can't Be Done. And it's about amazing innovators like yourself who are also up against some regulations that may be slowing you down. How are you feeling right now about being, as far as being supported by the government and regulators related to your company and your innovations?
Yeah, there are a few dimensions of this. One dimension is, can you sell the product? The other dimension is, what do you call the product? And then the other dimension is, what is the broader set of regulations, incentives, corporate tax incentives, access to land, et cetera, that we would get versus maybe another company? Globally, Just Egg is sold in Singapore, China, US, Canada, soon to be in Europe. So I think generally regulators have been on point about looking at it, about assessing it fairly, focused most importantly on, is it safe for human consumption? The answer has been yes. Making it clear, so as long as it's labeled that it is from plants, that we're being truthful to consumers. So on the Just Egg side, we've had a good time of it. Now on the can you sell it labeling side, now on a more broader policy side, part of the reason why conventional egg production is so low cost in the US, about 7 cents per egg, is because soy and corn ends up being heavily subsidized. So you end up subsidizing lots of folks to grow soy and corn that primarily feeds the animals we eat. And we look at that as being a bit off, that maybe we should step back and think about, what does it look like to subsidize crops that people eat directly? Mm-hmm. So maybe instead of subsidizing soy and corn for chickens to consume, it might be better to subsidize sweet potatoes or yams or apples or oranges or kale or spinach. Something that someone could buy at Walmart or a farmer's market and chop up meat directly with their family. So that's a regulatory change that might be more helpful.
And also, you know, may help us feed people who are hungry.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Now on the other thing we do, we can get to whenever you like, the meat side.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I want you to start the meat conversation with who is Ian? Can you tell me about Ian and then tell me about, and your brand is Good Meat, right?
The brand is Good Meat. Yes. All under the same company. So with Just Egg, we're using a plant to make an egg. With Good Meat, we're using an animal, a cell from an animal specifically, to make an unlimited amount of meat. So if you think about conventional chicken or pig or beef production, you have billions of animals. Those animals typically are in these large industrial warehouses. They're fed lots of soy and corn. In the case of a chicken, after about 47 days, they're slaughtered, they're chopped up, made into chicken nuggets or chicken wings, chicken breast, chicken fingers, chicken whatever. And it ends up being not always the best for the animal, not the best for the land, not the best for our health, not the best for the environment, not the best for mitigating zoonotic diseases like COVID-19, which is literally a disease that comes from an animal to a human because of things that we do. So we say, let's cut out the stuff that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And let's start with the cell. Let's get rid of hanging out with billions of animals and all the consequences of that. Let's feed nutrients to the cell. And then let's manufacture it in a large scale culturing or cultivation process. So if your viewers and listeners can imagine walking into a microbrewery and seeing lots of stainless steel vessels culturing beer, instead of the beer in those big vats, it's meat. And today we're the only company in the world that's achieved regulatory approval to sell it. We're the only company in the world that currently is selling it. We're doing this in Singapore. We're the only company in the world that's initiated an at-home delivery. We're the only company in the world building a real consumer brand around this under Good Meat. So imagine this was authorized in Singapore. If you're hanging out with your family on, you know, Thursday afternoon, you open up the Food Panda app, you order some chicken rice at Madam Fan, a Cantonese restaurant in Singapore. Delivery guy comes to you, gives you your chicken and rice, and it is real chicken, but it just didn't require slaughtering an animal.
It's amazing.
We're working to get that approved in the U.S., in China, elsewhere. As a part of the regulatory process, we need to, you know, make sure that we're educating regulators on what this is, what it's not, why it matters. And the Ian film that you mentioned is just one thing that we do to help people to more deeply understand why this matters, and how it could, you know, relate to their own lives.
So our listeners don't know who Ian is. So tell us who Ian is.
Ian's a chicken, a character in a film that we use to demonstrate that you can just take a single cell from an animal and not harm them at all. And then go through this process of nutrients, fed to the cell, and then scale up in this giant stainless steel vessel called a bioreactor. And you could literally imagine a world in which you're eating chicken, and that chicken, whose meat you're eating, is walking around.
Which I love. I found it very powerful. So yeah. I encourage you all to go to Eat Just and meet Ian. And I think it brings it home.
Yeah, we think that the eating of meat in any form necessarily has to be connected to an animal that no longer is living. It just seems so obvious. If you asked a million people, so when you eat meat, does it mean an animal is not here? Well, of course, but it doesn't have to be that way. We've thought lots of things in the past, like in order to listen to music, you have to buy the record, then you have to buy the CD, then you have to buy the digital file, except 87% of the songs listened to in the US today are streaming, right? We've thought in the past that, well, in order to use the internet, you need to use a computer. Well, that's not true. Now you can use the phone. We've thought in the past, if someone wants to ask someone to marry them, it has to be from a mined diamond. Well, that's not true anymore. It can actually be a lab-made diamond. Like, all these things that we're convinced are true, press them a little bit, you know, invest in a different way, and all of a sudden they are not so true anymore, and you make something better.
So what is the pathway from here to getting this approved in the US?
So it's somewhat similar to what we did in Singapore. So when you think about this process of making chicken without slaughtering an animal, there are a lot of important questions that come up, like where does the cell come from? What is the nutrient composition of the cells? How do you know it's safe making in this large stainless steel vessel? What is the nutritional data? What is the amino acid profile? So all these questions and all this data, we submitted to the food regulators in Singapore called SFA. They reviewed it, they appointed a safety panel, and they eventually approved it. Same process here in the US, except not only does the FDA review it, but the USDA reviews it. So there's a joint regulatory approach. So far it's gone well. We'll see how it plays out. I would imagine the US will be the next country that we see regulatory approval for, probably China sometime after that. And Europe is a little bit more hard to predict.
Well, keep us posted on that, because we want to help you spread the word when it's available. It's so let's go back to the science. Where did this science come from? Did you create the science as a company, or did you hire researchers that were already working on it?
For meat?
For the meat, yeah.
Yeah. So the broad idea of culturing whole animal cells is not a new idea at all. Pharmaceutical companies have been doing this for a long time. And the idea that you can make meat without slaughtering an animal has also been thought of a long time ago. Churchill has a quote back in the 20s or the 30s that talks about it. And there's a guy named William Van Eelen, who's been at this well before I was born. So this idea that it's possible and the technology was there, what we did is come around and say, let's stop just talking about it. Let's build a technology platform around what is already there. And we knew a little bit about how to make food for a consumer that was safe through Just Egg. Let's apply all those lessons and actually get it out there. So it is interesting that it wasn't me or anyone from my company that was walking around and said, what if that idea was already out there? It just took us to take it and say, all right, let's apply some lessons that we know and you really get out and make it real.
Wonderful. So we've talked about the business creation story. Let's talk about your creation story. Where did you grow up? And tell me a little bit about, you know, you growing up and the short story of how you became the founder and CEO of a company like this.
Yeah. Maybe just before I get into that, in case the viewers and listeners aren't fully informed, probably the most bizarre part of our relationship to meet is the decisions that we take that relate to how we just use the planet. So imagine you're floating above the earth. You know, there have been some more of these UFO sightings in the news. So whether you believe it or not, imagine
somebody's floating up there.
You're floating there, right? You're in your giantless steel UFO and you're looking down. You're trying to get a sense of what's happening down there on this planet, right? And one thing you're asking yourself is, how are these humans using the land? And then your answer is what seems that a third of the habitable land on this planet is being used for a single activity. And then I'm an alien asking another, oh, what activity is that? It seems like it's to plant soy and corn to feed animals. And then what do you mean to feed? Well, it seems like there's soy and corn planted to feed the animals that these human beings are then slaughtering and eating. And then you can imagine the other alien who's probably pretty intelligent being perplexed and saying, wait a second. So this is the only planet these human beings populate, right? Yeah, yes, sir. That's the only one. And they're using a third of it to plant soy and corn just to feed the animals. Isn't there a better way to do it? Well, yes, sir. Of course, they could just eat plants directly, but this seems to be the system that they have. You know, I probably just fly away. No need to mess with it.
Don't need to go there.
Just how bizarre,
yeah.
Right? There's no one, even I think the biggest proponent of intensive animal agriculture, that would say, if somehow we could start over today, right? If somehow we didn't have the existing food system, if we, you know, we're colonizing Mars, or we decide to, again, think anew about how we live on the planet, no person in their right mind would design this system. No executive at GM or Audi, or certainly not Tesla, would say, if we were starting over, let's start over with gasoline powered cars. It just would be bizarre. Of course you wouldn't do that. You would go right to electric. You'd go right to hydrogen. You'd go right to the thing that's just a more efficient way to get people around. So same deal here. But for me, I didn't know any of this stuff growing up. I wanted to be a professional football player. I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, just really focused on trying to be an athlete. Didn't do too well in school. Eventually played college football just for a little bit at West Virginia University. Wasn't that good. Then transferred to Cornell, really buckled down academically. Spent some time going back and forth living in sub-Saharan Africa and South Africa and Liberia and Kenya. Went to law school throughout all this. And was trying to find some new thing in my life that I could throw my life at before it was athletics. And I thought it was going to be international development work. I thought it was going to be working and trying to help vulnerable kids in sub-Saharan Africa. And I ended up feeling pretty frustrated when I was there because some of the nonprofits that I was connected to just weren't moving as fast as I would want. And I read a book when I was in Cape Town called Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid by a guy named C.K. Prahlad. And the premise of his book is, it's not that capitalism is good or bad. It's that capitalism is a system of doing things. And that doing can be destructive or the doing can be helpful. And it just depends on how you use it. but if used properly, it can end up solving a whole lot of problems, whether that's poverty or climate change or other issues. And it really, I was really caught by it. And I really started to think about how would one direct capitalism towards solving a big problem? And I was lucky enough to have a best friend, also the co-founder of the company, named Josh Balk, who really opened up my eyes to how broken our system of food production is, especially on the meat and egg side. And that led me to asking a buddy of mine to hang out on our couch for 6 months while I figured this stuff out, raised a little bit of money, and then we're off to the races.
By the way, you and I have Cornell in common. I went to the hotel school undergrad.
Very cool.
Did you go to agriculture?
Arts and sciences.
Excellent.
Sociology.
And I grew up near Ithaca, so you're a tough guy if you survived those winters. No wonder you're in Hawaii. And has the journey related to your spiritual life at all? I mean, around this, I mean, you grew up eating a lot of meat as a football player in Alabama. So talk to me about the meat to, I don't know if you're a vegan or a vegetarian, or talk to me about that.
I don't know what my, I don't know what the right term for me anymore is. I grew up eating. I'd be surprised if anyone watching and listening to this has eaten more meat than I have in my life. Just from years of 3 to 16.
A lot of barbecue,
a lot of chicken wings in particular, a lot of hamburgers, just a lot of meat. And I became vegetarian shortly after I stopped playing football, and eventually moved entirely to plant-based some number of years later. And now I, for the most part, am plant-based, except when I have the opportunity to eat our cultivated meat, in which case I eat it happily.
So maybe it's like happy meat. We have to come up with a new term for what you are, right? Happy meat eater.
That's right. It's kind of like, it's kind of like as someone who cares about the environment, the idea of, let's say owning a big, Hummer doesn't exactly appeal to me, but make that sucker electric, I'll buy it right now. So it's not about the Hummer. It's not about the meat that I have an issue with. It's the stuff underlying it, right? If you can move the animal slaughter away from it, you can move the harm to our environment away from it, like fry up some burgers, let's go. So that's my approach to it. In a deeper sense, I find there are a lot of reasons why I think moving away from the conventional system of meat production matters. The environment and zoonotic disease and health. For me personally, and this is not always a thing that drives most consumers, but for me personally, it's a very simple notion around why cause any harm if you don't have to.
It's compassion. It doesn't
make sense to me that if you don't have to slaughter an animal in order to have breakfast with your family, in order to nourish yourself, in order to, why would you do that? And I find it one of the most beautiful things I find is how clear-eyed kids are about this. I had the chance to show that Ian film to a group of 7-year-olds in Singapore. And at first I thought, man, this is a little bit heady for 7-year-olds. I'm not sure they're going to really understand cultivating meat bioreactors. But I showed that Ian film to them. This little girl raised her hand and she said, like in her 7-year-old way, I can't do an impression of her, but in her 7-year-old way, like, so it means like we don't have to hurt the animal to eat chicken. I was like, you got it. She was like, I'm in.
Yeah, that gives me chills. It's very simple, very powerful.
Simple. We don't have to overcomplicate things. Why would you want to cause harm if you don't have to? Why kill another living thing if you don't have to? And I find just the way young people are able to see this is just awesome. Last story about it. Our very first dinner, we invited five kids between 12 and 18 to come to the dinner. It's the first time human beings ever ate real meat that didn't require slaughtering an animal. And there's a young girl named Kaya, 12 years old. And, you know, we get lots of questions about regulatory and about capacity and cost reduction. Really important questions. Kaya raised her hand. The very first question is, can we use this to help more animals? And I think there's something in all of us that often gets shut out by how we live our lives and habits and time and pressures. But that very basic, I want to figure out a way to do the right thing. Why would I cause harm? I think is in us. And that's what I want these two platforms to be about.
It's amazing what you're doing. So in the future, what kind of meat will you be making? Good meat.
So we want to get at all the major kinds of meat and seafood there is. So we're going to start with chicken. Beef will be next year. Then we'll move into pork, duck and turkey, and even seafood. You know, I've had the chance to get really connected to the oceans here in Kauai. The consequences of our industrial system of production, you end up having nitrogen spill off that injures our coral reefs. Overfishing ends up meaning that, you know, when you're taking your young kids snorkeling, instead of seeing an abundance of marine life, you see, you know, 1% of what you might have seen 70 years ago. So we eventually want to get into marine animals too, like a bluefin tuna, like shark fin. But it's a chicken, then beef, then pork, then probably one or two other land animals, and then fish. The real goal here is I have a 2-year-old niece named June. And by the time June graduates from high school, I want the vast majority of meat that's consumed not to require killing an animal, tearing down a forest, using any antibiotics. And I think we'll live in a much kinder world if we can figure out a way to get there.
It's an amazing vision. It's an amazing story. I do feel like I'm with a compassionate leadership superhero today. I'm so honored I got to meet you. So how can we all help, the people that are listening? Yeah. How can we help your company and, you know, maybe communicate to our congressmen or what, how can we help?
Yeah. I think there are a couple things. The first thing being the most important, that when you decide to be a little bit more intentional and pause, if only for a second, before you have that food that you've always had and ask yourself, does this feel like me? Does this feel like it is aligned with the best of me? I think the act of just pausing for a second and being a little bit more intentional is the most important thing. And I think often what you'll hear from yourself is, it's not me. You know, eating that conventional animal product doesn't feel like it's the best of myself. So I think that's my biggest ask to the people that are hearing this. The second is if you're thinking about starting a company, you should. There's not going to be just one company that does this. There are going to be companies all over the world. I want other people to start things and get out there and solve this problem. And then the third is the more that that regulators and our other public officials recognize that a new system of meat production is important for this country, is important for our world, the better. And I think a whole lot of things come from that, different incentives, access to land, a more evidence-based regulatory approach. So just contacting your leaders and saying, hey, it's a big deal to pay attention to this, to think about how you create a system that's more conducive to this, that really matters. But it starts with just pausing in your own home when you wake up in the morning and saying, does this feel like me anymore? And I think often you'll find that it doesn't, and there's something better.
Thank you, Josh. It was a pleasure being with you, and it's been so inspirational, and I can't wait to go out and get my Just Eggs and circle back with you and let you know how it goes.
Well, thank you for paying attention to this. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for listening to the Compassionate Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com. Please join us each week as we shine a light on compassionate leaders making a positive impact on their communities and the world.